This song points up the difference between life and living. We're all alive, no doubt about that, or we couldn't be listening, could we? But real living begins when life is properly related to God, when life takes on eternal meaning, when the control of the life is in the hands of God. You're listening to Back to the Bible. This is Ord Morrow speaking, and we're so glad to have you listening. You know, as I move around the country, one constant question comes to me by this one and that one, and it is, well, where can we hear your program? Well, our new listening schedule for winter is now available. It's the latest, and it gives all the stations and the time the broadcast can be heard and the dial location. And the size of these just right so you can slip them into your letters and you can invite your friends to listen too. Or should you be moving, the schedule will tell you where to listen when you're newly settled. The schedules are free. Ask for as many as you need and then use them carefully and prayerfully. Just ask for listening schedules and we'll know. Write Back to the Bible, Lincoln, Nebraska, 68501. Well, strong and right decisions make the difference in many lives. The quartet say they have set their feet on God's road.
I've set my feet on God's road, and never will I drift or roam. Though I am often weary, I'll travel till I reach my home. 10,000 foes may surround me to turn me from the right, but God's great arms are around me, His arms of love and might. I've set my feet on God's road, and never will I drift or roam. I've set my feet on God's road, I'll travel till I reach my home. I've set my feet on God's road, and never will I turn around. I've left the dreary lowlands, I'm heading for that higher ground. My Lord is walking beside me, He keeps me by His grace. And every step He will guide me, till I see Him face to face. I've set my feet on God's road, and never will I turn around. I've set my feet on God's road, I'm heading for that higher ground. I'm heading for that higher ground.
of late I've been thinking about the dangers that we all face, and I want to share some of my thoughts with you. I suppose that it's a safe assumption that most of us do not realize that there are dangers all about us. Most of us, if we would say we're in danger, we'd smile at you and say, well, where's the danger coming from? Am I about to be struck by an automobile? Is there a storm coming? Where's the danger? It's also a very safe assumption that most of us would not know what our dangers are, that we are in danger, nor what they are. Another thing, and I don't want to talk just about assuming things, but you have to start somewhere, and I suppose that ask the average person if he wants to be a success, and he will say, well, of course. Fact is, I have never met anyone that doesn't in his own heart want to amount to something. Actually, when you trace much of sorrow and heartache and heartbreak and even suicide down to the very core, it's because people say, well, I wanted to amount to something and I just never could get on track. Life had me puzzled and upset and frustrated, and I didn't understand, couldn't get anywhere, and I'm a failure, and so there it is. Isn't it strange that we strain every muscle and take any risk and make or break friendships just to be a success? We seem to have an undefinable fear of failure. It's more than interesting to note that the word success is only once used in the Scripture. The Lord spoke unto Joshua, and among those things the Lord told Joshua was this: this book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. That's Joshua chapter 1 and verse 8. It seems to me, as I look at our world, there are two attitudes in the world today which are not very well taken. The first is the attitude among young people, and I'm happy to say that if I'm observing things correctly, this attitude is changing some. But there seems still to be an attitude for everyone to get out of my way. I'm a young person, I'm full of zip and vinegar and want to do things, and I have strength and wisdom and so on, and let me take the world over. We're going to make it much better. You've made a poor job of it, and so we're going to take it over. You see, it's hard for any of us to really realize. It's sort of a shock for us to even come to think that the world would have hardly noticed if we'd never been born. So when we're born into the world, we push our way up and make ourselves known and want to take over everything. There wasn't a time not too long ago when there was a word went around that, you know, don't trust anybody over 30. I compare that to what someone said: you never can trust a man until he's just about to die, because then he'll tell the truth. He knows nobody can hurt him anyway. But that's an attitude we have. Get out of my way. You're of no value. And then, of course, there's the attitude on the part of us who are older that it is the duty of the coming generation to cure the world of all its ills. We certainly fear the mess we have made, and we find it easy to shrug our shoulders and to shrug off our responsibility, saying, well, let the young people do it. We continue to go in debt until we can't pay our way out, but we say, well, the generation's coming, they can take care of it. And the problems we pile one on top of another and shrug away and say, well, let the young people take care of it. What a frightening thing, what a frightening inheritance to leave to the coming generation. That we are in a world with many dangers, I think, is obvious to anyone who will think about it a moment. Now, these dangers are from every direction. They are social, political, economical, moral, and spiritual. And I'd like to speak of the dangers that we all face as time goes by. These dangers are, in some sense, for all ages. Of course, when you think of tiny children, there's a change there. But for all ages that can think and have responsibility, and they're for all places, for all kinds of people, the dangers are very much the same. Say, well, we don't have the same backgrounds and all kinds of things that are different about us. Yes, I know, but we're made very much alike. And these things keep us from being real successful in life, from having a feeling that life is really worthwhile, from having our needs met, from the highest goals of life, from lives that bless the world in which we live. you know, really have some meat on them and leave something. Leave behind us, as the poet said, footprints on the sands of time. Well, we want to leave more than footprints on the sands of time. We really want to amount to something. Now, while I'll not mention a single one of those things most commonly accepted as the most eminent dangers, it is not because I'm not aware of them. Fact is, I may just mention them once so that you'll know I am aware of them. I know they're there, and yet I'm not so sure they are the great dangers of our day. They are the four P's, we call them, poverty. Well, everybody knows about that, and the person who looks at our world and doesn't see that is overlooking a very important thing, and I recognize it's there. I've walked among the poor. In fact, I've lived among them. I know what it means to be poor myself. I know it's there. The problem of overpopulation. I've moved about the world to know something about that problem. I know the problem is there. I'm not simply ignoring it. And the problem of pollution. Anybody who lives almost anywhere today and has eyes and a nose has been affected by pollution, and he sees that it's there. It's not because I do not recognize the problem that I'm not going to talk about that. And then, of course, there's politics, the problem of government. Everybody knows that's there. It's a common thing. We face it every day. Yes, I know these problems are there. But I think I'm aware of the cause, and I'm not fool enough to think that there is a cure for all the ills of our world in one generation. At least my generation didn't do very much to solve the problems of its day. Fact of the matter is, we may be accused of leaving more problems when we leave than we had when we came. So what are, then, the great dangers of our day? Well, they're very simple. They're not very difficult, really. See, this is in itself one of the dangers of our times, that we look for something great and big, you know. We want to solve a big problem, when the problems probably lie right at hand, a very little thing. And the first thing I mention is that nothing is considered personal today. That's one of our great dangers. Whatever happens, you know, we look about and say, who did it? And first thing we do is throw up our hands and say, not me. I didn't. You know, you can go back to your childhood, and it even starts there. I don't know where children learn this, unless they learn it from us who are parents. But as soon as something happens, little children will say, I didn't do it, Mommy. I didn't do it. My brother did it, or my sister did it, but not me. No way. As an illustration, we have crime. But no one's guilty. Who did it? Not me. I didn't do it. Well, of course, I might have done it, but just remember, I'm not guilty. You have to look and see the place I lived in. You know, I was brought up in the wrong kind of environment. So, while I did it, I'm not guilty. Don't blame me. It was the society I lived in, the fact that I was poor, or maybe the opposite. Maybe the fact that I had too much and I didn't have parental guidance that I should have had. I didn't do it. See, nobody's guilty. That's one of the great problems. Nothing's considered personal. These criminals have come from someplace. The fact of the matter is, they have come from our homes. They graduate from our schools. They come out of our churches. They are not from Mars or from the moon. We did it, and that's the problem. Everything happens. The world blows apart. People are hurt. People are murdered. But nobody did it. Nobody's guilty. We forget that most outlaws were raised in some of our homes, homes probably without law. So we just, you know, we live. We get up in the morning and shash around and do nothing and have no decisions and go no place and set no goals and make life just as easy as we can for everybody. And we forget that we have to have direction, that we have to have walls to guide us. And so a home without law is going to have people without law. And that's the problem. We look about and things happen because we are without law. And we say, I didn't do it. Wasn't my home. After all, we have a nice home, don't we? Front lawn is green. Have a lovely front door all painted. Have rugs on the floor. We're not guilty. See, that's the problem. We look horror-stricken over some crime, but forget that it might have been started with a temper tantrum. Little fellow, you know, throws a tantrum. Don't know what to do with him and say, well, he'll get over it. No, he won't. Not by himself. He'll grow up and he'll just get worse. See, this is the way it starts, and probably in a home of a respected citizen. No, I read something in the scriptures the other day. It really shook me. I don't know how it'll appeal to you, but when I read it, it did something for me. It's in the book of Deuteronomy, and it's in chapter 21. And it's a very simple thing. You don't have to be a very well-educated person to understand this. If you can understand the English language at all, you can understand what went on. It says this: if a man have a stubborn and a rebellious son, which will not obey his voice, the voice of his father, or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, he will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him, and bring him out unto the elders of the city, and unto the gate of the palace. And this is what they shall do with him. They shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones, that he die. So shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and shall fear. Now, I just bring this illustration to simply say that there was a time when they had to say, it's somebody's fault. And his father and his mother couldn't hide him. And they couldn't say, well, our son, you know, he would never do a thing like that. He's a good boy. After all, he's raised in our home. There came a time when the parents had to say, this boy is a rebel, and he's a glutton, and he's a drunkard, and we're just going to have to deal with it. And it was a pretty severe thing, and I'm not suggesting we go to this. No way. I'm simply saying that one of the problems we have now is that nobody's guilty. A lot of things are happening. We stand around and don't know what to do. Our world's falling apart and blowing apart, and things get bad, and we say, isn't it terrible? I wonder who did it. But nobody's guilty. It's like a lady that got on a bus, and the bus was fairly well filled, and she had to stand, you know, as she rode to her home. And she couldn't imagine what had gone wrong with the churches and the schools, that the young people had lost their respect for the aged. Why didn't some of those young people stand up and let this little bit older lady sit down? And she was upset, and she said, it's the church's fault. It's the school's fault that I had to stand on the bus. Well, let me tell you something. I learned how to treat older people before I could before I had cut my teeth, and I learned all that at home. I learned that when some older person comes into the room, you stand and offer them a chair, or if you're sitting on a bus and someone older, or if you're a man and a lady gets on the bus, you stand and let her have your seat. Someone not long ago kind of rebuked me and said, you know, I offered a lady my chair, and they said, I'm a lady, I believe in equal rights, and I'll stand. And I said, I'm a man, and I believe in equal rights, and I have a right to be a gentleman. Sit down. So you see, nobody's to blame. Here we are. And a lot of this starts, a lot of things start right beneath our nose, and we don't see it and won't admit it when we know we're guilty. Nothing is considered personal. And the church is not a personal responsibility. The numbers that ignore it are proof that it's not a personal responsibility, certainly not to very many. That's for dead certain. So you have to stop and think about some of these things. Oh, I know what we say. We say, oh, I believe in the church. You count me in. I'll tell you now, that church is a wonderful thing. I believe in the church, all right. But if every time we stayed away were a vote to close the church down, I wonder how many of them would be open. And then we go on to speak about it, you know, say our little says, try to impress each other. I hear it all the time. Say, I'll tell you, that church is a marvelous thing. That pastor down there, he's really something. He's a good Joe, which simply means in their language, he's a good fellow, you know. He's a nice guy. I wouldn't want to live in a town without a church. Certainly wouldn't want to be here without that preacher. I remember that was even said to me once in a little town when I was going to move away, and somebody came and said, oh, wish that preacher'd stay here. Sure been a different town since he came. But you see, that's the problem. We don't want to take any personal responsibility to go to the church and to give and to work and to pray. Oh, well, now, wait a minute. That's going a bit too far, you know? And we wouldn't want to do that. After all, we wouldn't want to appear too religious, would we? Well, really, there's not too much danger, actually. You know, I hear people say, well, he's just too religious. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Did you ever hear of anybody who had too much religion to die? I never did, and I've been around a few dying folk. No, we never did. See, all we're actually saying is we want somebody else to carry the load and take the responsibility. That's what we're really saying. Israel recognized the need of authority. A state knows that it must have authority, but the church cannot act or speak with authority. We dare not say, "Thou art the man." We have taken free grace to mean freed by grace to do as we please. And here, among other things, is a very grave danger. No personal responsibility. I hear men say, well, yeah, I believe in religion. I'll let my wife take care of the whole thing. And we say of our children, well, we're not going to decide for our children till they get older. Let them decide for themselves. All we're saying is, just count me out. I don't want any responsibility. These are some of the dangers. Are you guilty of these things?